our book really starts by taking a look at South Boston. And South Boston was a very different place back, you know, when Whitey was growing up. And it was a neighborhood where loyalty meant everything, loyalty to family, loyalty to neighbors. And it's in that climate where Whitey, you know, really came into his own. It was where Whitey would get to know John Connolly, the FBI agent who years later, you know, would recruit Whitey as an FBI informant.
Now, he was a restless kid, a troubled kid, never abiding by the rules. His first arrest was at 13 years old when he dropped out of school. But the striking thing, of course, is that he has his brother, Billy Bulger, who rose to become president of the Massachusetts Senate. But the striking thing is that difference. Now, how early on did that manifest?
First of all, it really was not that unusual at that time, certainly in Boston and maybe in many places, to have, you know, one brother do very well and another one not so well. I mean, if you look at this case, you know, Whitey Bulger's top Lieutenant Kevin Weeks, he had two brothers who went to Harvard University, and Kevin became an enforcer or, you know, a sidekick of Whitey Bulger. And the irony is that his father, you know, in a neighborhood where toughness was sort of admired, the father was actually prouder, according to Kevin, of him for working for Whitey than he was of the two brothers that went off to Harvard. Mm. So it's not that unusual. But certainly within the Bulger family, there were six children. Whitey was the second oldest. And they were poor. That's why they lived in the projects of South Boston. They qualified for public housing. Their father lost an arm as a young man and had very, you know, difficult time supporting his family. There was just not a lot of work in the 30s and 40s for a one-armed laborer. So Whitey, you know, he didn't like being poor. He started, you know, at tailgating, which was, you know, robbing goods off the back of trucks down along the docks in Boston.
So that led him to eventually bank robbing. He robbed a bank in Indiana. Around the country, went sort of on a little bit of a crime spree. He did go to prison. He went to prison in Atlanta and also at Alcatraz. When he came back to Boston, he became an enforcer for the Killeen brothers. Now, how did he rise up the chain from there?
Well, you know, the interesting thing about Whitey is that, you know, he had been a high school dropout. And he served in the Air Force, you know, and earned his GED in the Air Force. But where Whitey really became educated, where he educated himself, was in Alcatraz. And he talks of Alcatraz the way many of us might talk of our, you know, being alumni of a certain high school or college. I mean, they were this fraternity. And while he was in Alcatraz, you know, he was in a very tiny one-man cell, and they had this incredible library there. And he read a book a day. He studied military history. He studied Machiavelli. He learned how to manipulate people. So when he got out of prison, his first job, you know, his brother got him a job as a janitor at a courthouse, because where else would a felon work but a courthouse, right? But he didn't last very long. He really didn't like the 9-to-5 job, and he quickly wandered back into the underworld. But Whitey had been the benefactor of the fact that while he was in prison, there were these huge gang wars in Boston that claimed the lives of, you know, more than 60 people. And so when Whitey got out, there was really a lot of disarray in the underworld. And he quickly did align himself with the Killeen brothers. And the reason he was able to sort of rise up is there was a war between two factions in South Boston. And Whitey, you know, was part of the more sort of organized Killeen faction. And when Donnie Killeen was killed by the rival faction, Whitey quickly realized that he needed to, you know, sort of mediate this dispute. And he couldn't do that on his own. He didn't trust the upstart Mullins gang. So he sought out one of the most powerful Irish mob leaders in the city, Howie Winter. And he approached him and said, "Will you mediate this dispute?" Now, Howie was very taken by the fact that Whitey had this cachet of having been in Alcatraz. He was a tough guy. He was viewed as more disciplined, you know, more of a moneymaker. And so Howie mediated this dispute, and he put Whitey in charge of everything in South Boston. And then Whitey became a full-fledged member and equal partner in Howie's Winter Hill Gang.
We're talking with reporter Shelley Murphy, the Polk Award-winning journalist who's been covering organized crime since 1985. She's co-author of Whitey Bulger, America's Most Wanted Gangster, and The Manhunt That Brought Him to Justice. Well, you, by the way, would be considered a traitor. In fact, that's what Whitey Bulger has said of you. You are a traitor. There is this South Boston kind of code of loyalty. And you mentioned John Connolly. I guess Whitey had given him an ice cream cone when he was growing up as a kid. He grew up to join the FBI and made Whitey an informer. Now, why would anyone make Whitey Bulger an informant?
Well, you have to go back to, you know, what was happening in 1975 when John Connolly, the young FBI agent, recruited Whitey as an informant. And by the way, Whitey disputes that. He prefers the word, I think, analyst or liaison. But the fact is that the FBI had a national mandate to take out La Cosa Nostra, the mafia. And they did not take into account regional differences. So in a city like Boston, where the so-called Irish mob was very powerful, that really wasn't taken into consideration. The FBI's target was the mafia. And they recruited Whitey as an informant against the mafia. You know, Whitey certainly had information about his rivals in the mob. And Whitey also had a partner named Steve Flemmi, who was Italian and had been offered membership in the mafia, but decided it was more lucrative to team up with Whitey. So the two of them became this formidable pair of gangster informants. They were allegedly out killing people and shaking down bookmakers and drug dealers, and at the same time, feeding information to the FBI that gained them the protection of the Bureau.
You say that he may have killed as many as 40 people. He's being charged with 19 counts of murder now. A few that he says he did not commit, including the murders of two women. Now, I mean, there are so many here, but Deborah Davis, which is especially interesting because the FBI also decided to kind of drop this case.
The one thing that, you know, Whitey, you know, we know this because we've seen letters that Whitey has written since his capture, you know, to friends who shared these letters with us. And Whitey is very adamant that he did not kill the two women who are among the 19 victims. And the reason that he's so adamant about that, he says he didn't do it, but also he has worked all his life to cultivate this image of the good bad guy, the gangster with scruples. And gangsters with scruples don't strangle women and bury them and go upstairs and take a nap, as Whitey's friends claim he did. You know, Whitey's word against Steve Flemmi's word. According to Flemmi, it was Whitey's idea to kill her, that he felt that she was a liability because she knew about their relationship with the FBI. There would be times that she was out to dinner with Steve Flemmi and he would have to run off to meet their FBI handler, John Connolly. So according to Flemmi, you know, they lured her to this house in South Boston, which was right next door to where Whitey's brother Billy lived. And he claims that Whitey strangled her and then they buried her in an unmarked grave. Now, as I said, that's just one, you know, one word against the other. The second murder, there's another murder of Deborah Hussey. And she was sort of like a stepdaughter to Flemmi. Mm-hmm. He had, you know, had a long time relationship with her mother, had other children with the mother, raised Deborah as his own child since she was a toddler. And, you know, he started molesting her when she was a teenager. And it's a very sad story. I mean, she became a drug addict and kind of a loose cannon and was viewed as a liability using Whitey's name and Steve Flemmi's name. And again, Flemmi claims that it was Whitey Bulger's idea that they should eliminate her. But it's not just those two. I mean, Kevin Weeks, Whitey's longtime sidekick, mm-hmm. lieutenant, he claims that he was there and that he came up, you know, they were in this house where Steve brought Deborah Hussey, and he claims that he came downstairs and witnessed Whitey strangling Deborah Hussey. And it's a very sad one. She was just a sad figure who had the misfortune of, you know, her mother had this relationship with Steve Flemmi.
You know, also, I remember reading in the book about how Steve Flemmi sent somebody after Deborah Davis was killed, even though they removed all of her teeth before disposing of the body, you know, to go get the dental records. This was so deep.
It's very deep, because the other thing they did is, you know, her poor mother is wondering, where is my daughter? And Steve Flemmi is saying, oh, I think she took off to Texas. And the mother went to the police and filed a missing persons report, and it was put in the FBI National Computer Database, and someone surreptitiously went in there and removed it from the database. And yes, they went and took her dental records from, you know, this was at a time when it was more difficult. She was killed in 1981. You know, the DNA evidence isn't, you know, the state right. that it is today. And they had removed her teeth, but they still, there was some concern that that if they had dental records, they could identify her.
Well, Shelley, it is such a fascinating story, and busting into the myth of Whitey Bulger is perhaps one of the more interesting things. You know, do you feel like you know what motivated Whitey Bulger?
I think he's a really fascinating character, and that's why there's so much interest in him. He's not a one-dimensional figure.
Shelley Murphy, co-author with Kevin Cullen of Whitey Bulger, America's Most Wanted Gangster and the Manhunt That Brought Him to Justice. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
There's much more on the book and the event at wordofmouthradio.org.